We study billionaires, and this is episode 86 of the Investors Podcast.
Broadcasting from Bel Air, Maryland, this is the Investors Podcast. They'll read the books and summarize the lessons. They'll test the waters and tell you when it's cold. They'll give you actionable investing strategies. Your host, Preston Pysh and Stig Broderson.
Hey, how's everybody doing out there? This is Preston Pysh, and I'm your host for The Investors Podcast. And as usual, I'm accompanied by my co-host, Stig Broderson, out in Denmark.
In this episode, we continue our discussion with best-selling author of the Hedge Fund Wizards book series, Jack Swagger. And I'll kick it off with the first question. So one of the critique that value investors often have about traders are that how can they use fundamentals? Because there might be intraday traders, so they might do, as you say, like 500 trades a day. I also know that when you are a trader, you can actually look at real fundamentals that might change within a day, within an hour, and still make rational trading decisions. So could you please provide some examples of how traders use fundamentals?
Sure. Well, and I put this in some of my analytic, my trading books that I write for myself, not just the books I've interviewed people. And it comes in the Market Wizard books as well. And that is that applying fundamentals to trading. All right, let me back up here for one second. I'll just throw this out on the side because it's just a good example. And then I'll go to the other point. But to make the distinction. So from my own perspective, it's not for everybody. But for the most part, if I'm trading and I trade, I go for periods depending on how busy I am or what else I'm doing. Sometimes I'm trading, sometimes I'm not. Last few months I've been trading or whatever. But when I trade, if I put on a position, I'll put a stop in. I'll put it whether I'm long, I trade futures, basically. My trading is in futures. If I go long or short, whatever it is, when I enter the trade, I put in a stop, which kind of defines my approximate worst loss. So I don't have to think about it anymore. And it's one of the things I got out of the books. It goes back to your other question, what I get out of the books. One of the big things I got was from Bruce Covenor, who said, always decide where you're getting out before you get in. And his point was, because that's when you have objectivity. And that's great advice. And so I do it myself. And so I put in literally the order is a, it'll be an order to either at a limit or a market to get in. And attached to it is with a good little cancel stop. And it's paired. It's part of the same trade. So that's for a trade. Okay. And that's one approach. But there's then the things which I might consider an investment. So here's an example. Some months ago, I had late last year, I had gone through the stock market and I was like thinking, well, maybe write down some levels of some stocks where just put in orders where I think there would be big support, where if they went down there, I'd buy them. And I look at markets which are sectors which are out of favor because everything rotates and where your really best opportunities come when sectors are completely out of favor. Well, China was slowing down, or you can always find your reasons. I don't care what the reasons were, but like XME and that whole, all the metals, oils, everything was like going down. So for energies and metals, for some of those ETFs, I like picked numbers. And XME, I put some very, very low numbers and they actually got hit. Might have been between 14 and 12. And I picked them on technical reasons. I think if it gets down there, I don't care. I mean, I went back in 2008. In 2008, it hadn't gotten that low and whatever. So I thought if it goes down there, I'll hold it. It's an ETF. It's a multiple equities. I don't care. I don't care if it goes to zero. I mean, I do care, but I think it's not going to go to zero. I'll hold it for years. It doesn't make a difference. That's an example of an investment. So for me, that was, I figured, hey, XME, the metals ETF goes from 50 to 12, it's going to have value eventually. I'll just hold on to it, that type of thing. So that's an example of an investing trade. So that's, I have no stop on that. I don't want to buy it at 12 and put a stop at 10. That's not the point. I'm not worried about that's an example. So that's the mentality of an investment, is you're buying something where you figure it has intrinsic value and it's very, very low relative to its potential long-term range, and you buy it and you hold it until things change. And that's, but from a trading standpoint, it's the opposite. You want to have your risk control.
So a good way to kind of synopsize what you just said there, would it be, you're really kind of trading the volatility for a short-term profit, but you're doing it in something that you don't mind holding for 5 years, 6 years, because you know the intrinsic value of the long-term trend is eventually going to basically save you or pull you out in the event that it just continues to move against you for a long period, call it 3 months, 4 months, or something like that. It's moving against you. You're not losing any sleep over it because you're really in it in something that you know is going to have a long-term value for yourself.
Yeah, it has to be like the type of thing where you say, I'll hold it to zero type of thing.
Yeah.
But you don't do that. You only do that for a small portion of, you know, you don't put all your money in something like that, but you can do that selectively. You do it in things which have, why was doing that with ETFs? Because they're multiple stocks. So, I mean, you could pick a mining stock and it can go broke for whatever reason, who knows? But if you buy a basket of stocks for an ETF, you're not exposed to that. Before, there was a very interesting question about fundamentals, using fundamentals in trading. This is a point, I never hear anybody else make this, and I have put it in my own books, but I think it's really true. And when it comes to fundamentals, the way fundamentals are most useful to trading now, not investing. Now, I believe people can use fundamentals to invest. An example I gave is maybe like a way you could use it, right? But for trading, where you're taking more of an in-out, you know, more leverage type position, there, the value of fundamentals is not with the fundamentals, it's fundamentals where the market acts opposite to the fundamentals. So it's a contrarian use of fundamentals. So it's a matter of fundamental news comes out, it should have the market going up and the market barely budges or it goes down.
So let's just talk about the current conditions right now. So we're in April 24th, 2016. You're seeing all these companies miss their earnings. Earnings are just going through the floor for all these companies. You'd make the argument that the fundamentals are bad. You would think the multiples would trade lower, and the market screams back to almost its highs that it's been seeing. So in that situation, everyone can kind of relate to that because everyone's actually seeing that in their account right now. Talk to us about your example so that we can kind of apply.
Yeah, so the trader's perspective would be that, hey, you know, earnings are coming out. Stock should go down. It's not. It's going up. And so it's not like what an investor's perspective or what maybe a novice investor's perspective would be. Hey, this stock's going up and the news is bad. It's even a better. You know, I mean, it's even a better sell. You know, it's something like that. But a trader's standpoint is, hey, this stock is kind of, you know, looks like it's high. News has come out. It should have gone down. It's going up. I don't know what's going on. I don't care what's going on. The market is telling me it's going up. So it's when fundamentals do the opposite of what's expected that's important from a trading perspective.
Yeah, I think it's a great example, Jack. And if I could just come up with a really simple example. So whenever I think I've mentioned this a few times on the podcast, but I used to be a commodities trader, being one of those doing like 500 trades a day, which seems strange since I now feel I'm over-trading because I did like one trade, I don't know, 8 months ago. But whenever I was trading, I was looking at the weather. So I was a power trader. I was looking at the price of electricity. And given how much demand and how much supply that were coming out of the market, there was a given price that the market believed would be the correct price. So I would be sitting and look at fundamentals. I'd be looking at the weather and says, well, okay, if there's more wind coming in, that means there's more supply, which means that everything else equal, the price should go down. What Jack is saying is that there was a variety of different ways. But really, it's just a question of what does the market expect in the short run and what is really happening. And you can actually do that with fundamentals, even though it sounds strange to a value investor that you do have fundamentals within an hour or 2 hours.
In most cases, fundamentals ultimately determine markets direction. Obviously, markets will just go up or down for no reason, but they can take a long time. And fundamentals work, but they work broadly. They're very blunt instruments. They can't be used for timing. They can be used for investors. They can be used for taking positions and holding it for years. So I've put that like, you know, that's how they can be used. But they can't be used for saying, oh, here's fundamental news. It's bullish. That means I should buy. That doesn't work unless it's a complete surprise, in which case then the market may respond in the direction. But then, of course, it'll respond so quickly you can't take advantage of it immediately. But the thing is, in most cases, the real value, if you're going to use them for timing, it's in a contrarian fashion. That's the main point I'm trying to make. If you use them for investing, you use them the logical way, so to speak. If you use them for trading, you use them contrarian.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Today's episode is sponsored by Range Rover Sport. Range Rover leads by example with their dynamic design that rises to the occasion. It's got powerful on-road performance and commanding all-terrain capabilities coupled with signature Range Rover refinement. The third generation Range Rover Sport is the most desirable, advanced, and dynamically capable one yet, redefining sporting luxury. It's got advanced cabin technologies such as active noise cancellation and cabin air purification, offering next-level comfort and refinement. The purposeful cockpit-light driving position sets the tone for a focused interior that promotes exhilarating driver engagement. Award-winning Pivi Pro infotainment is at the heart of the experience and provides intuitive control of the vehicle systems. You can enjoy a dynamic drive and total comfort with optional 22-way adjustable, heated, and ventilated electric memory front seats with massage function. Design your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. That's LandRoverUSA.com. Have you ever wondered if there's an AI tool like ChatGPT specifically built for the stock market? A tool that not only aids you in your research and analysis process, but also allows for dynamic discussions? Today, I want to share such a tool with you called Meka. Meka is the AI-powered stock research assistant now enhanced with real-time stock data. Meka does a lot of the heavy lifting of sifting through financial statements and company data and delivers it to you nearly instantaneously, and the best part is that it's 100% free. Try it out today and ask Meka questions like, what is the financial health of Microsoft? How much cash does Copart hold on its balance sheet? What is the return on invested capital of Adobe, or millions of other prompts? Check it out today for free at Meka.com. That's Meyka.com. The Holy Grail of Investing, the new book by Tony Robbins and co-written by investing legend Christopher Zook, reveals the secrets of alternative investments like private equity, venture capital, energy, real estate, sports franchises, and more. It features exclusive insights from investing titans who collectively manage more than $500 billion, including Robert F. Smith, Vinod Khosla, Michael B. Kim, and many others. In the Holy Grail of Investing, you'll discover how to take advantage of the trillions flowing into private equity by becoming an owner of firms that actually manage the assets and share in the revenue they generate, how to take advantage of the 2 to 3 times higher returns of private credit as an alternative or complement to bonds, how to invest in the energy evolution and ride the wave of trillions in global investments, how investments in private real estate can work as an inflationary hedge and source of tax-efficient income, and how many of the world's greatest investors thrive in both good times and bad. The Holy Grail of Investing by Tony Robbins is available now wherever books are sold.
All right, back to the show.
So, Jack, I was going to ask you a question right now about Edward Thorpe, but we already talked about Edward in the first question. So what I'm going to do is just kind of amend this a little bit. And sure. Two billionaires that we talk about on our show a lot are Stanley Druckenmiller and Ray Dalio. And you've interviewed both of these guys. Which one of those two guys would you rather talk about during this question that you found maybe a little bit more interesting than the other, or that you think might have a little bit more of an interesting discussion?
Well, is there a particular question about?
Yeah, because I'm gonna tailor the question more towards.
Well, you give me the question, then I'll pick which one I'll use.
All right. Well, then let's talk about Dalio's risk parity. I know that in your interview, it hinted at the idea that he said this one thing is the holy grail of investing. And I would like for you to kind of talk to our audience about that interview with Ray Dalio, where it took place, kind of like what it was like in his office, what his personality was like, and then a little bit about risk parity and this holy grail to investing.
Well, the Bridgewater is sort of this huge hedge fund, but more than 1,000 people. So they have their large office complex in Connecticut. And Dalio's office in particular, it's a nice bucolic Connecticut setting. There's like a stream outside, and it's so the nice vibe to it. Dalio himself was kind of a terse guy, I would say. I don't know if he's like that for everybody, but he did give me the interview. We did meet twice. But it was like I was scheduled. You know, I was scheduled for one interview, scheduled for the other interview, and sort of when the time was up. He may have said time was up at the second interview.
I think I remember reading that.
I did a chapter, time's up. You know, it's like the end time going. You know, it's like, okay, that's it. You got it. You know, that's all. That's all for it. That's all, folks. That was Dalio. Druckenmiller, in contrast, which I interviewed a long time ago. I interviewed Druckenmiller in his New York apartment on some weekend afternoon. And we went on for hours and hours. And he had a lot of stories. And it was a long, you know, it was a much longer interview. Although Druckenmiller, I did on one sitting. In Dalio's case, I did it in two, but I still spent more time with Druckenmiller. What Dalio is talking about, the real edge sauce, the real key, and I think this is what you're referring to, is really the power of diversification, in that if you take a single investment, you have a certain amount of return to risk built in. If you took a lot of equivalent investments, but that were not correlated, or at least partially uncorrelated, you still get the same return, but you drew like this curve, which shows the risk coming down as you add, you know, more investments. And so that's sort of a critical part of it, is this diversification element. And that's absolutely true. It's not, I don't think that's particularly unique. I think a lot of people understand that, but it is really very core to his whole thinking. And mathematically, it is true. Mathematically, it is absolutely true. That's why, for example, you could take a fund, a multi-manager fund, and if you pick managers who are about equivalent, you have a much better product with a multi-manager fund, fees aside now, but just from a straight investor standpoint. Because if they're all about equivalent, then the return level shouldn't be affected, but your risk goes way down. So that diversification concept is, yeah, in fact, what the line I probably used myself, and I don't know if it's probably not original to me, but I mean, it's kind of a common line, is diversification is the only free lunch on Wall Street.
I got a quick follow-up question, because on our show, we had Jim Rickards. I don't know if you're familiar with Jim Rickards, but we had him on our show just recently. And Jim's pushing gold really hard. A lot of people in our audience are kind of listening to that interview and kind of reading a little bit more about gold. And we know Stanley Druckenmiller took an enormous position in gold. I want to say, what is it, Stig? 20%, 25% of his whole portfolio is in gold right now.
Yeah, it's significant. And he also talked about Kyle Bass. It's really interesting, all these billionaires going to gold right now.
So this is a question more to you, Jack, because I know you're a futures guy. I know you dig into this stuff. What's your opinion on gold in the next year to three?
Okay, so that opinion is based on a technical reading, but I would see people put out studies on gold, right? And they'd say, well, gold production, they break down production, and they have gold consumption and jewelry and all this. And, you know, I thought to myself, if you look at the numbers, gold is one of these markets where there's never a shortage. It can never be a shortage of gold. Why? Because gold gets mined, it gets stored, and there's about 100 times as much gold as used in any given year. All this writing and stuff that goes on about the fundamentals of so-called fundamentals of gold, about what's being produced and what's used, and it's nonsense. It's like 1% of 100. It makes absolutely no difference. Gold is determined by one thing, psychology. It's a pure psychological market. That's it, pure psychology. Now, the psychology could be affected by inflation expectations, relative interest rate levels, currency fluctuations. Those are the types of things that affect gold. The tricky part is some of these things usually affect it the same way, but in some cases not. You know, so it's not as simple as just saying, well, you know, gold will always go up if there's inflationary expectations. Well, it usually will, but not always, maybe. But in any case, it's purely a psychological market. Now, I think it's pretty hard to trade something on trying to anticipate psychology. My opinion is you get the psychology by looking at charts. And in case of gold, what you have on the charts is actually a very strong bullish pattern on a long-term basis. Because what gold did is it had this bear move, and after a large bear move, went into this rounding bottom. And that rounding type of pattern doesn't occur that often. It occurs every now and then. But usually when you get a rounding pattern in markets, either bottom or top, and then the market goes, like you get a saucer and it pops out of the saucer and keeps on going and maintains it, that usually is a long-term bottom. And so if I had to guess, if you said, hey, here's $100,000. You're going to have to, you have to be long or short. You know, you got to pick one and you got to hold it. And you have to hold it for 2 years, 3 years. You can't do anything. You have to hold it. Or if you're long or short, you have to hold it. Definitely, I would go long, even though it's gone straight up for recently.
So, Jack, it's always really interesting for Preston and I to be able to grow our knowledge with our guests. That's something you really value. And we do the same thing from our audience. We talked about not shorting Japanese yen, the whole thing about independence and having your own strategy. And we think that's super important. I think that goes for all three of us, but we also use other people to grow our knowledge. Jack, I know that you recently founded Fundseeder. Could you please explain how you implement the inputs from the community in your own strategy?
Okay, so first I got to tell people, most of the audience will not, fund seeders new, so I'm sure the vast majority of the audience will not know about it. So fund seeder is not my, was not my original idea. I can't take credit there. I'm a partner in the firm, and the founding partner, Emmanuel Bellari, we have another partner, James Bivings, but he had the idea of using the web as a central source where you could bring together traders worldwide who have trading skill, but are totally unknown and have no way of accessing capital, and act as a connecting, as a connection between them and investors who are looking for new trading talent and don't want to, you know, invest with the same multi-billion dollar managers everybody else is investing with. So that was his basic concept. And the idea was to create a website where traders could post their numbers, not they themselves posted, but they could link their accounts to the website. Therefore, the numbers get verified from the broker. So you create a verified trader base of traders all over the world, just because, not because we're saints or anything like that. Our self-interest is, if we can attract unknown or known, but good traders to the site, then we will be able to find them before anybody else does. And then we have a separate company, Fundseeder Investments, that will use the database that we form on Fundseeder to select superior traders we find and then package them in individual funds or multi-manager funds and use that product for investors. So that's the basic model. So we act as the connecting link through two separate companies. The Fundseeder Technologies attracts the traders and gets the verified track records. And then the Fundseeder Investments uses that intelligence to form a superior and completely different product.
So, Jack, whenever I hear something about measuring the performance of portfolios, I always think it's an interesting conversation because it's really hard to find, you know, the right answer to how do you really measure who's doing well. I mean, it's also a question, how much risk are you assuming? So can I ask you, because you've spoken to so many traders and so many investors, how do you measure portfolio performance?
I have my own favorite single measure. Favorite because I think it is, in one number, captures the essence of return and risk. And it's much better, I think, than a lot of other things they use. So everybody uses the Sharpe ratio, right? That's the popular thing. Now, there's nothing wrong with the Sharpe ratio. It's okay. However, there are a couple of drawbacks to the Sharpe ratio, but maybe the biggest drawback of the Sharpe ratio is how it defines risk. The Sharpe ratio says, well, you have your return, you divide it by the risk. What's risk? Risk is volatility. Now, here's the interesting thing. Sometimes high volatility is indicative of high risk, but it's not always the case. I can give you examples where low volatility is indicative of high risk. And the other part of that is that high volatility is not necessarily bad. Traders don't mind high volatility. I'm not traders, investors. Investors don't mind high volatility. They mind losses. You know, I've been in this business for a long time. I've never had an investor say to me, darn, you made 10% last month. I can't stand that type of volatility. Investors don't mind volatility. They don't like downside volatility. So if you're trying to measure what risk is the way investors perceive it, why use volatility, a symmetrical volatility measure, which is penalizing strong returns? And then you penalize really good managers who will sometimes have very large gains because they really hit it right. Like we're talking about Greenblatt with that Wells Fargo trade. But he structured a trade where if he's wrong, he loses a little bit. And if he's right, he makes a lot. So you're going to penalize it because he's made a lot? Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/WSB. That's fundrise.com/WSB. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement. Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Ally, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account. As many of you know, I love studying businesses and networking with business owners. The more I've studied businesses, the more I've realized that starting and scaling your business is easier than ever because of companies like Shopify. Did you know that Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US? Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify even helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. What I personally love about Shopify is that it's the turnkey solution to kickstart and grow your business, and they are totally committed to giving you the necessary tools to succeed as a business owner. Plus, they have an award-winning customer support team there to help you every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/WSB. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/WSB now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/WSB.
All right. Back to the show.
Yeah, so Jake, my question would be, say that I would be a trader and I would want to raise money because I'm doing the best trades and I can show like real good track record. So if I was a trader coming to you and say, okay, Jack, you need to fund me or need to find someone who can fund me because I have a great track record. Would you look at the Sortino's ratios? Is that it? Which is basically just the maximum drawdown in a given month or given time period. Is that a better measure given your critique of Sharpe's ratio or what do you think?
Yeah, the Sortino ratio is definitely much better. And what I personally use is something called the gain to pain ratio, which is closer, in conceptually much closer to the Sortino, obviously, than the Sharpe. And the gain to pain ratio and the Sortino will have a reasonable amount of correlation. I like the gain to pain because it's real simple and it boils things down to its absolute core. So with the gain to pain, the defining to people, and I guess it's my own measure. There are some things out there like the Omega function, which is a curve, which evaluated at zero level will give you a same ranking. But as a single statistic, the gain to pain ratio, as far as I know, I was the first one who started writing about or using it. So what the gain to pain ratio is, you take all the monthly returns and you sum them. And then you take only the monthly losses and you sum those. And then you take the first sum, which is the sum of all the gains, so all the total amount of money made. That's net because you're making in some months, you're losing in some months. But if you add all the months' returns, what you basically get is the sum of all the returns you've made. And then you divide it by the absolute value of all the losses. So what you're basically getting is the amount of money gained for the amount of losses suffered during that period. So the more losing months there are, you know, the bigger that denominator will be. The larger the losing months are, the bigger it will be. So you're penalizing exactly what you want to penalize. You're penalizing multiple losing months. You're penalizing larger losing months. And you're really differentiating a track record where the gains are made without a lot of losing months, without big losing months. So basically, that's the concept. It's the amount that it's a total of all returns divided by the total of all the losses, the absolute value of that. That's the ratio. So you can have managers who are riskier than you realize. For example, you get a manager, you look at his track record, and he's got a, let's say he's got a 5% down month. You say, well, 5%, that's not too bad. But hey, how do you know? Well, you know that manager could have been down 25%, just managed to come back and ended up down 5%. If you have daily numbers, there's no place to hide. So if you do a gain to pain ratio of all the days, you take all the days, add them up. You take all the losing days, add them up. You take that ratio, boy, that gives you a microscopic look and it tells you everything. It gives you the positive thing for the return. It gives you the negative thing for every single daily loss that occurred. And that ratio is a powerful number, very simple, powerful number. So that's what I personally use. In my mind, it's the single best, most effective and meaningful and easy to calculate statistic. So that's my favorite statistic.
That'd be neat to see that graphed. If you could take that daily snapshot and graph the performance over time, I think
that's what Fundseed does. Yeah, that's the main thing it does. In fact, I like it because as a trader, you can put your equity, you can look at your equity curve. It's really nice to be able to see your equity curve. You can see when you're starting to go down or whatever. And so that's one of the things. And brokerage companies, as far as I know, they don't offer that.
Yeah,
they probably don't offer it for a good reason, because if people started seeing their equity curve, they'd go down and might close their accounts. I'm just guessing here. I'm not accusing anybody of anything.
Well, I'll tell you what, I know there's going to be a lot of people in our audience that are interested in checking this out. So if you are interested in going to Jack's site here that has all this service, please go to our show notes. We're going to have a link there. So just in the event that you forget the name or whatever, just go to our website, go into our show notes. We're going to have that in there. We're going to have all of Jack's books. And let me tell you, as a person who's read multiple of these books, they are just fantastic. And Stig, I know, can attest. And if you guys go back, we did a podcast episode. I don't remember what the episode number was, but we did a podcast episode on hedge fund market wizards. And we just loved that book. And this is before we knew Jack and before we had Jack on the show. And everyone knows that we're pretty honest with our reviews. If we don't like the book, we're pretty upfront and honest about it. So we really enjoyed all of the books that you've written, Jack. And we definitely want the people in our audience, if you haven't read any of Jack's books, you are going to love them. So we're going to have a link to all of his books on Amazon in the show notes. Is there anything else, Jack, that you would like to hand off to our audience that they can learn more about you, website or anything like that?
Well, like I said, the main one is fundseeder.com. I also have another website, jackschwager.com. I would also throw out that there are narrated versions of the Market Wizard books, audio versions. And I'm currently, the first time I've had the opportunity to actually pick the narrator. And so one of my Market Wizard books, New Market Wizards, never had the narration done. My agent was great in getting the rights for me. So I went through a process of picking narrators through ACX, which is Connected with Audible. And they've got just phenomenal narrators. And it was, I was floored. Like I got like, I put up the couple of excerpts and I got like 40 people respond. They were all great. There's so many of them were great. And I got it down to 10 and I got it down to 4 and I got it down to 1. And the guy is just doing just a knockout job. So this is the best narration of any book I've had of mine, which is coming out in about a month. And that'll be the New Market Wizards. The fellow's name is DJ Holt.
Well, so one of the things that we offer, so we have a deal with Audibles, Jack, through our website. If people go to our onto our website and they use our link for Audibles, they can download their very first audiobook for free using our link. So you might want to even hold off if you want to get your free book or you want to buy it when it comes out in May. It's up to you. But we'll have a link to the Audibles link if people want to do that and get their first book for free. We'll have all of the links to Jack's book. Jack, thank you for your time. I know that you've got a very busy schedule. You do countless things. So to take some time out of your weekend to sit down and chat with Stig and I for an hour and 20 minutes, we are just so thankful and really appreciative. And I know our audience is going to benefit from this greatly. So thank you for your time.
Well, this was fun because you guys went into, you got a lot of different types of questions. You get so tired of getting the same questions all the time. So it's nice to get some from left field.
Well, thank you for your time, Jack. Hey, so I want to take this moment just to make a quick announcement to everyone in the audience. So one of the things that Stig and I want to start doing is doing more live events all over the world. So, for example, in June 11th, we're going to have an event in Seoul, South Korea. So anybody listening to our show from Asia that's out near South Korea, if you want to link up with us for a free dinner event, on the 11th of June, and this is coming up in 2016 in Seoul, South Korea, we're going to have a sign-up location on our website at theinvestorspodcast.com where you can go in there. You just basically click on a link, you give us our email address, and then we'll provide you more information about the event. And it doesn't cost anything to sign up. We're just, you basically pay for your dinner and that's it. And you guys get to kind of meet us and hang out. So for the one in Seoul, South Korea, it's just going to be me. Stig's not going to be able to make that one, but we have other events. And if you're interested in doing this, just go to our website and go to this this page. You'll see it at the very top of our homepage. There's it's in the drop down menu, and then also where we have our priorities for the show. We have a thing where we have 1, 2, 3, and then number 3 it says link up with us for a live event, and that's where you'd sign up for this. So just a heads up. So in the 16th of July 2016, where I'm going to be in Huntsville, Alabama. So if you live in Atlanta, Nashville, or anywhere down in that area, feel free to come out. These are all on Saturday nights. And then in Baltimore, Maryland, on the 24th of September, there's another event. So if any of those kind of are in your neck of the woods or in your neighborhood, feel free to go to our website, sign up for those, and then we can kind of hang out for a night. So I want to make that announcement. We're going to have a lot more of these coming up in the future. So just kind of stay tuned and keep looking at the tab to see if we're coming to a town near you.
Thanks for listening to The Investors Podcast. To listen to more shows or access to the tools discussed on the show, be sure to visit www.theinvestorspodcast.com. Submit your questions or request a guest appearance to The Investors Podcast by going to www.asktheinvestors.com. If your question is answered during the show, you will receive a free autographed copy of the Warren Buffett Accounting Book. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. This material is copyrighted by the TIP Network and must have written approval before commercial application.